Welcome to Jaguars This Week. Jaguars This Week, presented by Aetna. With the voice of the Jaguars, Brian Sexton.
And Tony DeSalle.
Caller analyst, Jeff Lagerman.
And Tony DeSalle.
And Jaguars.com senior writer, John Osher.
And Tony DeSalle.
Jaguars This Week is brought to you by Ticket Exchange, Sonny's Barbecue, Wells Fargo, your local Jacksonville Teal Deals merchants, and by Everbank. Jaguars This Week begins right now.
The show 6 months in the making, ladies and gentlemen. We have been talking with Tony Buscelli about stepping in and being a part of this since March, and he finally grants us his presence.
Zeke contract negotiations.
Oh. Yeah.
First, we had the lockout. I was locking. I locked myself out, and I was actually striking to be technical. And then we had, on the line. I held out for a great signing bonus, and I didn't get it.
And so what Osh and I are hoping now is some sort of a recreation of training camp 1995.
As long as it's not raining out here.
When the brash rookie steps up. And the veteran. It was good theater then. We're hoping it's good theater now. Welcome to Jack This Week. I'm Brian Sexton. Jeff Lagerman is here. Senior writer John Osher is here. And the new guy is here. You know Tony Buscelli. How are you? Welcome. Nice to have you.
It's good to be here. I've listened to the show, obviously, throughout the years since 1995, and always enjoyed the banter and it's a good and the insight, and it's good to be a part of the team now.
And now you understand how Joe does it, right?
Yeah, I still don't understand fully.
Just watch. Loggy will tell you how to deal with him. Falcons are here this evening, and that practice is not open to the public, which is why we're out here tonight, so that we can share some insight with you from that. From your perspective, Jeff, and Tony in particular, what's the value as a player in getting the opportunity to work, even if it's just 2 hours in a limited time frame, in a practice setting against a different team?
Yeah, I remember back when I was a young player, we would actually hop in a bus from New York and drive to Pennsylvania and work with the Washington Redskins, and I liked it just because, you got to go against guys that were frontline guys, A lot of times in practice, you've got one frontline guy, and he's the only guy you see, So you get to the best part of it is, at least from that standpoint, physically than it is to practice just amongst yourselves because you're really taking less reps. You're practicing against their offense, and obviously your offense practices against their defense. You're not having to take as many reps, and so the reps, though, were obviously of higher intensity because it's competition.
Right.
And I think that's the best part about it is that you do bring your game to a higher level, and coaches get to evaluate more because you are going to bring your game to a higher level playing against a guy from another team.
Yeah, I agree with Jeff. I think one of the things once you're practicing, and especially if you have a bunch of veterans, So Jeff and I worked against each other, and we'd go hard, but we'd also be smart.
Well, and we had signals.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, in certain drills, you kind of point, hey, Jeff, I'm going this way. It's been a long practice. We're doing this. And you become familiar with each other a little bit. And so once you bring another team in, Jeff talked about the intensity going up in our level because the guy across from you now wants to whip you. There's days my job was to get better but also to give Jeff a good look so he could get better, and vice versa. When an opposing team comes out here, you're trying to embarrass that individual. You're trying to beat them. You know that you're going to watch the film with your peers. There's going to be, and if you're a young player, the coaches are paying even more attention to this session as far as making a judgment whether you deserve to play this game. So it's not quite a preseason game, but it's pretty close when you get to the intensity level. You most likely you'll see some fights. There's always fights every year because maybe not now because you're just doing one a day, but we used to do it. We practiced twice in a day, maybe 2 days in a row. And by the end of it,
you got a bunch of alpha males.
Absolutely.
You got a bunch of alpha males, and this is the area that you want to kind of mark.
Yeah.
And so, but it's fun. The good thing is that the work that the Jaguars had last year with the Atlanta Falcons, it was professional, but it was heated at times. It never got out of control.
I like a good fight every once in a while.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. But I'm not. I would never be one to participate. But the young players,
Osh? Yeah, talking to Terrence Knighton today, talking to Terrence Knighton today, the coaches have kind of said, they're going to try to keep the scrapping to a minimum and whatnot. And Terrence today goes, oh, no, they're not. There'll be some scrapping.
So absolutely.
The players know.
I mean, to the veterans, you try to be smarter, but at the end of the day, all of camp, it hasn't been hot. You're practicing at night. But listen, when you get irritated when you're tired, you get irritated, and especially if you have a bad practice or you yell that, and the other guys are going at it, sometimes things are said, things are done, and tempers fly. You want to see that out of your guys, not necessarily fighting, but pushing the envelope of intensity.
And this is actually not just competitive for the players. I mean, this is competitive for the coaches.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, you look
especially
at...
Especially these two teams.
Mike Smith, started his NFL career under Jack Del Rio for the most part as a coordinator. I mean, he was in Baltimore. But I mean, he wasn't really recognized as a coach. I mean, he was kind of a defensive assistant.
Go get the coffee.
Yeah. So I mean, and Hamilton, defensive line coach, Brian Van Gorder, who's their defensive coordinator, spent time here as a linebacker coach. Alvin Reynolds spent time here
offensive
as a defensive
back.
Boudreau, the offensive line coach. So, I mean, and some of the relationships, Mike Smith and Jack get along fine,
but the other coaches were
that were let go, fired from the head coach Jack Del Rio. So it is competitive amongst the players, and it is competitive amongst the coaches.
Is this the new route in the NFL with the way that training camp has changed? Is this the way that teams are going to get ready for the season? More of these?
To me, I think this is a really a good evaluation that's not as good as a game. But you can get more reps than a lot of young guys would get in the game, because all the young guys are going to get reps in a practice. And it's just another tool, certainly, for a Gene Smith and a Thomas Dimitroff to evaluate personnel.
I actually disagree with Jeff. I think with the new CBA rule where you only go once a day, if I'm a head coach, I'm not going to waste traveling to only be able to practice against that opposing team once. I mean, it makes no sense. It made sense where before you could come, have two-a-days, get a lot of work in, your travel, you could get some practice off or whatever, getting to a location. I like work. I think it's looking for tonight. But I think the new CBA not being on the twice, it's a little bit of a wait. And come on, let's get two practices out here and take advantage of being able to work against other guys.
If they go two preseason games at some point, this will be the route more. But I agree with Tony. If they don't,
but
I
maybe just adjust the way you go 18 games, don't you have to make it worthwhile? And I don't think you need 2 days throughout practice to get ready for football anymore. Guys practice year-round. And I think Loggy and I probably agree on that part of it. But if I'm going to fly in and go work with another team, I'm not going to do a walk around and sit around a hotel all day and be out of my element with meetings and space and all that. I want to be on the field twice to get work in.
Well, it's not too bad, though, Bemmy, because you got a day to work, against the opponent. And then tomorrow, day before a preseason game typically is very, very mild anyway. And then you're going to play a team in a preseason game the following day. So the way it's set up, it's not too bad. Is it the perfect scenario? No, you'd like to get more than just one practice in. But kind of working this day here kind of in conjunction with a preseason game, to me, it makes it valuable.
So what do you want to see tonight?
Well, I want to see a lot of guys. I mean, holy cow. I mean, the list is long. I mean, because of the way the lockout happened, because we haven't seen certain guys that weren't allowed to practice until just before the New England game, and then guys that have been hurt or sidelined for whatever reason, there's a lot of people that I want to see. Tim Snyder, I want to see him, kind of on the side, working, dropping weight. Derek Cox is coming back from injury. I want to see how he looks against Roddy White and Julio Jones. I want to see Matt Roth against the Atlanta Falcons
Baker.
Tackles.
Sam Baker's a tackle.
Play both the right tackles.
Yeah, I mean, you want to see guys, You want to see how they look. No different than a practice. But the best part is that the intensity ramps guys' intensity for the moment.
Osh, is this your list? Who are you? Who are you looking for tonight?
That's named the list from this morning. The Jaguars looked much better this week in practice than they have until now. And you would like to carry over a little bit to tonight, and that's what you'll be watching for.
You got Team Teal stuff tonight.
Yeah, we'll be talking to Team Teal.
But who do you want to see? When you're not over there with the fans, who do you want to see?
Obviously, I want to watch the progression of Gatter.
Okay.
I mean,
did in New England. It's not locked where he's going to get hit, but seeing some different coverages, do some different things. My guess is we'll have some sort of blitz period. See how that. And then other than that, I want to see the didn't get to see him in New England. I want to see what he can do against top-end competition where it's, you know, it's physical. And then I'm with Jeff. I want to see our defensive line get pressure. I think we're going to have a great run defense. I think Terrence Knighton, you know, and I know he hasn't practiced and he's overweight and whatever. He has to get in shape. The guy's going to stuff the run. Tyson Alualu, he's going to get up the field. Paul Posluszny is going to run free a lot. I want to see, can we get to the quarterback? And you can't sack him, but can we move him off his face? Can we at least look like we get a sack? Because I think that's going to be critical to the long-term success of this defense.
All right, we need a break. Let's take it now. Jaguars this week from the practice field. Folks, you, unless you're a member of Team Teal, you won't hear it anywhere else except News Talk Radio, WOKV, depend on it. Welcome back to the Florida Blue Practice Facility outside Everbank Field in Jacksonville. For more Jaguars this week, presented by Aetna, Jaguars and Falcons. It's set to practice. I had a lot of tweets and a bunch of emails about a scrimmage. It's not that, folks. It is a joint practice, and Team Teal will be in the stands this evening, honored and rewarded for their efforts helping Tony here get this stadium sold out this fall. You know, folks, we're going to keep, because we got enough voices right here, and we're outside. We're not going to worry about the phones this evening. If you've got a salient point, call Linda in the studio, and if you're really good, she'll pass it along.
Or tweet it.
All right.
Tweet it to me.
At Tony Boselli.
At Tony Boselli. Just
there you go.
Shoot a tweet. That's how we roll.
Oh, good Lord. I never imagined you in 1995 as a tweeter. Of course, we didn't imagine anybody as a tweeter.
Yeah, that's the line of the night, right?
I got my first cell phone from the Jags when I got here and didn't have an email address.
Did they declare that as part of the salary cap?
I don't know. We don't want to go
back. You might want to not bring up some of those things.
Actually, it was a deal I signed with Altel, so it wasn't from the Jaguars. How's that?
Yeah.
So, all right.
Sure.
You can tell the dynamic of this show is going to get a lot more feisty. So here we go. The topics of conversation are wide open, guys, so let's go wherever you feel. But let's start with Matt Roth, the most recent addition to this defense. And it has been an off-season, how short it is, filled with additions to this defense. Loggy, you've seen him more than anyone this week.
Yeah, other than Osh. I think first and foremost it was a position of need. And the reason I say that, Aaron Kampman's coming back from a second ACL tear. He tore that right in the midpoint of the season. But remember, he didn't have the surgery until late. I think it was all
December.
The way into December.
It was December.
You know, so to start the season, he would be right at 10 months, which is, you know, that's asking a lot. He did it last year. But at the same token, he's rehabbing. He's working his way back. Larry Hart came back, which, you know, everybody's talked about Terrence Knighton coming back overweight. Larry Hart came back and was terrible. I mean, he looked like the Pillsbury Doughboy.
Maybe he played three technique.
But, I mean, Larry Hart last year probably played, you know, probably 248, somewhere in that range, and he came back, I mean, way overweight, not in great shape. And this really is an indication, hey, Larry Hart hasn't progressed like they would have liked to have seen. And it also shows that they want to have a rotation. You know, I mean, you remember Tony.
Yeah, but the Larry Hart thing, Loggy, is very disappointing because they drafted him last year as a guy. Now, he was a mid to late rounder, but he was a guy they thought could be a pass rusher. They showed flashes early in the year or during the year last year, and to show up like that. I mean, Matt Roth, I don't think, is here if Larry Hart shows up in shape
no,
the way he should.
No, if Larry Hart came back as a mean, lean fighting machine and really looks like he had taken another step,
yeah,
like an Austin Lane, that probably doesn't happen. But he didn't come back in great shape, and there was a deficiency. You had to have somebody that you knew that could step in, and all the other rookies, I mean, I'm not trying to criticize the rookies that they brought in, you know, whether it been the kid from the Colorado School of Mines or Osric Ray. You know, I mean,
yeah, but
they're just not very good.
Oh, what it is. I mean, they don't have a pass rusher. I mean, they don't have a guy to put his hand on the ground and make you game plan him. Now, Aaron Kampman, we hope, can get back there, and throughout his career, he's proven that. And I love Aaron, but he's a guy with two ACLs, second one in 2 years. If anyone can do it, Aaron can. But if you really want to be a top-end defense, you have to have somebody that can, if he's left one-on-one, can threaten the quarterback.
Aaron Morgan, they thought maybe could do that. I didn't see it at all against
– Aaron Morgan's got a long road.
And he is not heavy enough. He can't force the pocket at all with any power.
They were really hoping that, whether it had been Larry Hart
– Or Aaron.
Or Aaron Morgan, that one of those two guys really would have taken a step up and said, I'm here. But they haven't. And really, Larry Hart – and, John, you saw Robert Mathis in Indianapolis. Mm-hmm. When they drafted him, they really envisioned him with that Robert Mathis type of role as a sub-rusher and as a contributor on special teams. And watching the special teams tape against New England, he didn't make an impact on special teams.
Well, for frame of reference, Robert Mathis in his first year was an above-average special teams player, and at the end of the year, he was starting to have a pass rush. By this time in Robert's second camp, you know, you were hearing whispers around the Colts about 10 sacks.
Wow, look at him, right?
And you know, you've been around it. When
you're not hearing that whispers about the two guys we're talking
and,
about.
And, you know, he's an exception that doesn't always happen, but clearly that's what the Jaguars wanted out of these guys, and so far you're right, it hasn't happened.
And that's why Matt Roth brought in. And I know everybody is ecstatic about him so far. And I hope he is that guy. But he's also a guy who's going to bring attitude, which you have to have on defense. I think Austin Lane brings that as well. But he only had 3.5 sacks last year in 16 games.
So what
this isn't a guy that we've brought in who has 10 sacks coming off a 10-sack year. I mean, he's a try-hard, tough, physical guy who's going to bring attitude. But last year did not have the numbers.
Well, and
where's he fit?
Well, and I think this is going to be really where Matt Roth needs to be. Matt was 3-4, ended up going to Cleveland in a trade, played in a 3-4. But when Matt came from Iowa, he was a 4-3 defensive end. And Gene Smith is hoping and believes that his true calling is as a 4-3 defensive end and that he can start to achieve that type of number, Tony,
sure,
that you want to see out of a defensive end. Hopefully that he can achieve that by going back to where his roots were, and that's a 4-3.
And I don't think you have to have 10 sacks to be a successful defensive end.
No.
I mean, you can have 7, 8, 6. I mean, those are – but you got to be a guy that threatens the quarterback, that pressures him. And the question about Matt, and I haven't seen him near like as much as you guys have, Loggy, can he hold the point?
Oh, he's stout, which is what really surprised me the most watching him in practice, how stout he is, plays with great leverage.
Okay, good.
The name you hear kicked around is Jason Babbitt.
I was just going.
Who they liked last year. Had they not brought Campman in, he was a possibility, I guess. And, you know, he went to Houston, made the Pro Bowl. That's obviously what you're looking for. That doesn't happen very often. But that's what they think.
Well, they did it twice. Remember, because they had the guy that you love so much that's now in Detroit, who was from Arizona.
Kyle Van Den Bosch.
Right. I mean, they've done it a couple of times. Yeah. How did they take two guys? And Van Den Bosch had two bad knees.
Well, that was the issue with Van Den Bosch. You know, Van Den Bosch was in Arizona, and that's where Dave McGinnis, the linebackers coach for Tennessee for a long period of time, knew that, hey, we got to get this guy in Tennessee. He got a chance to see Van Den Bosch, but then knew that he had dealt with some knee things and knew he had a chance.
But he had production at Arizona too, guys. I mean, this was a guy who, and I'm not saying, listen, I'm glad Matt Roth's here. I think we're a better team, but Van Den Bosch had some. I mean, I think a better.
I guess what
I'm looking for is Babin, because Babin was a guy who never had put up real big numbers. He goes to
Babin was a bust in Houston.
He was a bust.
He
goes Kansas City, Philadelphia, Seattle. He was all over the league.
Yeah, he goes to Tennessee.
But how do they do it?
Well, Washburn's a very good defensive line coach.
There's a lot to do with it.
And he's put, and I think Colt's a good D line coach. But he was also put in a situation where that Tennessee defense gets pressure up the field inside. They're very aggressive, very active. If you watch him, taking nothing away from him, he's a good player. But sometimes those sacks, you fall into them as well.
Well, I guess that's what I'm asking. Is it a scheme thing that they did with those guys that helped them?
But here's the reason I think that Matt Roth and Aaron Kampman, and I'm going to go back against what I said a little bit, questioning whether he's the guy or not. The reason they might be the guys this year, and whoever's playing defensive end, is because number 93 is going to get up the field. That's Tyson Alualu. He's going to get up the field and cause that quarterback to move.
He's going to cause a lot of problems.
We need a break for news here at the bottom of the hour. This is Jaguars This Week. We're welcoming Tony Boselli to the program. And we are live at the Florida Blue practice facility outside Everbank Field. Jaguars-Falcons scrimmaging. You can't see it unless you're Team Teal, but you can hear it if you're a Jaguars fan right here on News Talk Radio, WOKV. As always, depend on us. All right, rolling right along here from the Florida Blue practice facilities. Tony is going to be with us a couple more minutes, and then he's going to go do
Team Teal. And then I'll be back.
With who?
Well, maybe for you and O.
Wait, come back.
Only for
don't,
you and O.
Don't come back unless you bring food.
If we tell people who's here with food, they better, you know, for the plug.
I'll tell them. I promise you this.
I guarantee you one thing. You'll ask.
I will have eaten or have food with me for me. I can't guarantee anything else. It's a crapshoot.
All right, here we go. Hey, fans, speaking of food, just text barbecue. That's BBQ to 72239. That's BBQ to 72239. And enter for a chance to win the Sonny's Game Ball Delivery Contest. You can hand the game ball to the ref at the start of the next Jaguars home game. Jaguars this week. And we were talking a bit about Matt Roth, and clearly that's a hot topic. What's been the hot topic in the Ozone this week?
Ticket sales. That's always been the one, and it's a huge topic. And, Matt Roth is really the topic in the Ozone because he's a new guy. And I think that's going to be a big thing to see against the Falcons is just how he plays, and, you know, that'll take place Wednesday and Friday night.
Like, I'm watching Aaron Morgan and Larry Hart over here kind of starting to warm up and stretch. What are Larry Hart's odds to make this team now that Matt Roth is here? I mean, are they significantly smaller, kind of smaller? Does he have a shot if he lights it up? Or
He's got a chance. You know? And the reason I say he's got a chance is because the linebacker group is not a particularly strong one. And so if Larry Hart can fill one of those special teams roles, he's going to find a way to make the active roster, make the roster, because he could be a guy that would be active on game day because he can play special teams. And a lot of defensive linemen cannot do that. Aaron Morgan and Larry Hart, those are guys that have to be good on special teams to be able to make the roster because they are role players on defense. And anytime you're a role player, you got to be a contributor on special teams.
How about the dynamic along the defensive line, in particular the ends? What does this do for Jeremy Mincy? You know, they talk about Aaron Kampman becoming a more situational player. I mean, how does Jeremy Mincy benefit from the chance to not have to necessarily put his hand on the ground and stop the run on first down?
Well, Mincy, there was an article, today, that talked about Mincy. Mm-hmm. You know, he was dealing with the loss of a friend this past weekend at a funeral. Felt a little bit, upset because he got demoted. Well, he hadn't been demoted. You know, they love Jeremy Mincy. Mm-hmm. And Jeremy Mincy has carved a role out for him, and that is that he can play anywhere, anytime, and will do it well.
He's the modern Brant Boyer.
So Jeremy Mincy's role is not going to change. I mean, he's still going to have the same role. But you got to have guys that can roll in. You know, they believe that the way they're going to play defense this year, 100 miles an hour, they're going to have 8 guys that are going to be active on game day, and they're all going to play. And if you look at the defensive ends, you're looking at Jeremy Mincy, Matt Roth, Aaron Kampman, Austin Lane at the defensive end spot. It will probably be a 3-man rotation at the defensive tackle spot because there's not a lot of depth there because you've got Terrence, you've got Tyson Alualu, and then Lejay Duzable behind him. And really, C.J. Mosley is really a one guy, a one technique.
D'Anthony Smith
is a guy that could end up filling it, but he's still got a lot to prove, you know. So you could have 8 guys active on game day, and right now that's pretty much what it's going to be. And so the number is, the question is what the number of people they're going to keep, as far as on the active roster.
And that was another big topic this week. You asked about the topics in the Ozone. A lot of people asking about the Aaron Kampman, taking fewer snaps. And, this team is really emphasizing that is not a demotion in any way. It's not a commentary on his ability. It's more of a reflection of the way they think the game is being played now. They use the Colts as an example with Robert Mathis and Dwight Freeney, who don't play anywhere close to 100% of their plays, but they want Aaron Kampman in at the crucial spots. They want him fresh late in the season, and they want him fresh late in games.
Loggy, you had some injuries over the course of your career, and how did they approach you coming back from injuries? I know you didn't have – you had the ACL in 92.
Yeah, it had the ACL, and the way I worked back is very similar to what Aaron Kampman is doing now. You got to slowly work back in the process, and even when I was the starter, whether it been here or in New York, I mean, I was playing that, 45 to 60 snaps a game, and I would get breaks, quite often too. I mean, Aaron Kampman, he's been so used to being an every down, high, which is very rare,
yeah,
you know, amongst defensive ends in the league. And so by, you know, designing a role that has maybe less snaps, it's not a big deal. It's not a demotion. It's really bringing him more in line with guys that really are around the league. John Abraham, who we're going to see out here today on the practice field for the Atlanta Falcons, doesn't play 65 snaps a game. He plays around 45. And so, hey, when you've got pass rushing defensive ends that have value, you got to find a way to keep fresh, and it's not a big deal.
Joe Cullen stuck his head in my office, you know, 1 or 2 days after it kind of broke that was happening. And he goes, it ain't like he ain't going to be on the field on 3rd and 6.
Yeah.
You know, so, I mean, that's what – he's going to be there on the plays that are most crucial.
Well, let me say this, that Aaron Kampman has to show, first off, that he's ready to go.
Right.
You know, we haven't seen him participate in a lot of team drills.
And he won't tonight.
And I saw Maurice Drew over the weekend, and team drills looked fantastic, looked fast, looked quick. I mean, all the things that you want Maurice Jones-Drew to look like. With Aaron Kampman, I've watched him. He doesn't look like Aaron Kampman yet. Now, I'm not saying that's a bad thing. I'm just saying that that's part of the process that is coming back from a reconstructed knee.
Can you gauge from last summer to this summer how far off he may be? Because remember, last summer was kind of the same thing. He had the surgery November of 2009, and he really wasn't practicing that much at this point, was he, a year ago?
Well, he was actually doing quite a bit, and I thought too much at this point last year.
Yeah, now that you say it, I remember thinking they needed a backup.
And Aaron, you know, I had a conversation with him about a week ago or so, and he said that, you know, this year he's going to drive the speed limit, which means that he's going to back off a little bit, whereas last year, you know, the pressure of being a high-priced free agent and going to a new team puts added pressure on the player. At least sometimes it's not added pressure, but sometimes it's perceived by the player.
Right.
And so he wanted to impress last year and get back quicker, really, than what he should have done, and really push the envelope probably too far. And so this year he's being smart about it, and it's a good thing. It's a good thing for him, and it's a good thing for this team, because it doesn't matter what he does now. It matters what he does, certainly, in October, November, and December, in my opinion.
So would you go slow with him in September then as well?
Yeah, I think that September is going to be kind of a work him in type of process. I don't think that the first game Aaron Kampman is going to get 45 snaps. You know, certainly if he's not doing anything in preseason game action, then he's got to work his way back in to that game speed, because it is different.
Since we talked about everyone else, before we take a break, how about a thought on what Austin Lane showed you watching the tape, and how he fits into this whole rotation?
Well, I thought he did okay. I wanted to see him do more in the game. I really expected more out of Austin in the game, and sometimes it's, you know, it doesn't happen. This game, I think, is a very important game for Austin, because Austin's going to be playing left and he's going to be playing right. When they signed Matt Roth, they've been moving those guys back and forth. You know, Mincy was talking about the reduced reps in practice. Part of that was they wanted Austin Lane working some at right, whereas up until this point, he's almost been exclusively just a left end. And so I want to see him a little bit more. He's had a fantastic camp. But, you know, ultimately, a fantastic camp can't exist just on the practice field. It's got to occur on game day. It didn't happen in New England for Austin Lane. I'm not saying that it was a bad game, but it wasn't something that made you go, wow, that was something.
Right.
Yeah, they were not down on Austin after the game, but there just wasn't much. Yeah. Wasn't much there.
On the flip side of that, you know, watching Tyson Alualu on Game Fame, you go, he's killing guys. Wow, look at that play. Oh, he's so strong. Oh, great hands. Oh, great pursuit. You know, those are the type of reactions that you have to have on game day for up-and-coming players. Tyson had it, and Austin did not.
All right, we're due for a break. Let's take it now. Hey, by the way, folks, when you're looking for department store style at discount prices, look no further than your neighborhood Stein Mart. There are 6 Jacksonville locations. Stein Mart, more fashion, less price, and much more to come on this 2-hour edition of Jaguars This Week from Everbank Field. We are outside on the Florida Blue practice fields with the Jaguars and the Falcons. You can't see it unless you're Team Teal. You can't hear it unless you're tuned in right here. News Talk Radio WOKV. Depend on it. Rolling right along here. Nobody helps you get ready for game night, which is coming up Friday, better than Gate. Snacks, food, drinks, and more. Stop by Gate today. We kick things off at 5 o'clock here with the Sonny's Real Pit Barbecue Tailgate Show in advance of the Falcons and Jaguars. Sonny's pregame show starts at 6, and, of course, the Jaguars and Falcons kick off. I take that back. It's 5, 8, 7, and 8. It's an 8 o'clock kickoff.
National TV on Fox.
Fox. Did you see Fran?
I did.
And the crew?
I did. I saw him in New England.
Okay. Didn't realize he was up there.
Yeah. Yeah. So, you know, what's going to be interesting, though, in this particular game is how the Jaguars really look. I mean, we're going to see a lot of the pieces kind of come together this week. They're still going to be missing a few. But this is a national game. Yes, it's preseason, but it's a national game, and it's following a game in which you gave up 47. You know, so I want to see how this team responds against the Falcons this week.
And Jack has been adamant. We did his radio show last night. We taped his television show a little earlier today. And he keeps talking about the defense, the defense, the defense, the defense. And so this week, you'd figure at least against a team that runs the ball pretty well. I mean, we all focus on Ryan and what they do, but this team runs the ball pretty darn well also. Hopefully the Jaguars can get a good look of that running attack.
You know, it's
Michael
Turner. It's a balanced team, but, you know, here's the crazy thing. If you look at the numbers, you know, the Atlanta Falcons offense have virtually the same rankings as the Jaguars. Isn't that surprising?
Yeah, that is. I didn't realize that.
The only difference really is points per game and where the Atlanta Falcons scored more points last year. But as far as yards go, total yards, very similar. You know, there's a little difference in that the Jaguars ran the football better. The Falcons passed the ball better offensively. But the numbers, I think the rankings were right around 15 and 16. I mean, they're right there neck and neck, which, you know what, most people on face value go, the Falcons offense way better than the Jaguars.
Because the quarterback.
Sure.
And Roddy White is an all-pro wide receiver, and they had Tony Gonzalez, who's as good as you find, as a pass-catching tight end.
The biggest difference between these two football teams, first of all, turnover differential. I think the Falcons were like plus 14, the Jaguars minus 15. And, I mean, how in the world did they even win 8 at minus 15 is beyond me, you know, if you just looked at just that number.
Right.
But the defense rankings was the biggest difference when you look at and compare these two football teams.
When you look at the quarterback situation in Jacksonville this year, you see a guy in Matt Ryan that came in right as a rookie and went and started and they went to the playoffs that first year, finished 11-5. I'm not trying to force the conversation here, but it's going to be coming up today, tomorrow, because of Matt Ryan. And how do you see it being different with Blaine Gabbert than Matt Ryan?
Well, you know, there's an established guy here for one, and they've said since day one that they are not bringing Blaine Gabbert in to start this season. Now, if he clearly outplays David the next three games, does that change? Who knows? But there certainly does not feel like any internal pressure necessarily to start him immediately. In Atlanta, it was pretty much, you know, it was pretty much a given that Matt Ryan was going to come in and play very early.
New coach, new quarterback, start the era off.
And in Atlanta, too, I mean, the whole Michael Vick thing had just gone down. I mean, the franchise and the fan base was ready to get over Michael Vick, the dogfighter, and to move on to a fresh new face. And so when the Falcons drafted Matt Ryan, there was not even going to be a debate about anything.
Sure, right.
Here's our quarterback. And that's it.
You've been pretty adamant about it, Logs, and the time factor being that the kid didn't even have an offseason. He lost 4 months to catch up with it.
Well, and you know, he looked good against the New England Patriots, but there were some things that, and in fact, I showed one of the differences on Monday night's television show. Yeah, that's a shameless plug, John. How do you like that?
I like that.
All access.
Like
Ozone, all access.
And I showed how that one particular play, real good, quick release, got rid of the ball when he had an unblocked defender coming in on the blitz, and then he had another play where it wasn't a blitz, but it was a zone dog, and he had plenty of time. It was going to get all picked up, and he could have been cozy and warm, stepped up in the pocket, taking his time and delivered it, but he felt that it was a blitz, did not a zone dog, rushed the throw, and that was the one that was nearly intercepted. I mean, so all these things are just he needs time. He needs time, and he missed however many OTAs they have after the draft, and then the mini camps that they can have, and then more importantly, just being able to talk. And then I actually talked with Blaine, I guess it was last week at some point, Saturday, and he said the hard, because I asked him, I said, did getting the playbook help? And he said, you know, it's like getting a foreign language book and then saying, hey, go ahead, you know, go ahead and learn it.
Right.
It doesn't happen. You know, so you have to have somebody help explain that. So, I mean, he's got a long way to go and a lot to learn, but he's working very, very hard, and I like his attitude.
Vaselli's back. He brought food for you.
He gets an A+.
Chick-fil-A is here this evening.
We got like we have 12 or 13 sandwiches
yeah,
there.
But by the time you get yours, how many will be left?
Well, I figure there's probably 6 for me, 6 for Loggy, and then the other
oh,
four
sure,
of
you guys
split
can split them.
Split them.
And you know, to reference Blaine Gabbert this week, he looked this week much like he has during most of training camp. He had some exceptional throws down the seam that not many guys in the world can make, and he also had some interceptions that a lot of guys in the world can make. Right. So I mean,
let me
that's
jump
sort of where
in,
he's
and
at.
I, and I know I'm jumping in midstream, so if I'm repeating something,
that's what we do here.
Said, yeah, but I'm not concerned with him make throwing interceptions right now. I'm not concerned with some of the mistakes. I mean, as you guys both talked about, he had no off season. What I am impressed with, what I saw on the tape and doing the Monday Night Show with you guys, he makes throws that you can't coach. He throws the spots where guys are covered and helps them get open. He throws the spots that nobody's there, but it's a timing route. He makes throws that a handful of guys in this league make. That's what I like. I don't care about anything else. That's right there tells me he stands in there when there's pressure. He felt a little bit on his own blitz. He got confused. But
that's natural.
That's natural. There's Tom Brady gets confused at that sometimes. But he got hit in the mouth and he didn't move.
There's two or three times a practice where he makes a throw where you turn around and raise your eyebrows and go, okay.
Yeah,
and,
I mean.
And that's what you're looking for.
And this is no slight against David. But there's very few guys that – there's few guys that play this game. And listen, Blainsville's got to do it, and he's got to do it consistently. And maybe we're drinking the Kool-Aid a little soon, but the bottom line is I've seen things that make you say, I see why this was the number one quarterback on 90% of the NFL teams this year. That it makes sense now.
Final thought here before we break for news at the top of the hour. You see the kid warming up in front of us here, this big, tall receiver, kid from Virginia. Just
Dontrell Inman.
Keep hearing good things about him. And yeah. Armin Benz and Jamar Newsom. And, you know.
Well, you know what, Brian, though? I mean, you're hearing a lot of talk, you know, from a lot of coaches and a lot of people that watch practice. But make no mistake, the guy that's really raised eyebrows has been Cecil Shorts.
Yes.
But I'll say this. I agree with you. He has. But if one of the big receivers doesn't make this team, they'll go get somebody in free agency. They're not going to go. I don't think they go into this season with a bunch of small receivers. I think if they're going to go get a big possession guy if one of these guys doesn't work
Kasim
out.
Kasim Osgood isn't that guy?
I don't – Kasim, Hall of Fame, Pro Bowl, special teams guy, dominant, changes games for you. He doesn't consistently catch the ball.
Yeah, I disagree with you, Tony. I think they're going to stand with what they are
at wide receiver
just because that's the type of offense they are, and they want to see some of these guys develop. You know, Jason Hill, Jarrett Dillard, you know, whether it be one of these young guys or whatever, they're going to stand pat. And what are you going to do? You going to go get Terrell Owens?
You got to go get some guy who's a big possession.
Randy Moss.
Hey.
How about Lyman Swede, the Steelers?
Lyman Swede just cut him. He's a big guy who can run. He can stretch the field. I know he had problems catching the ball. Inconsistent. But
you never
this
know.
Is a guy who's a big, fast individual. We have a bunch of small, fast guys. And this isn't even the debate about a one or a two or a three.
It's
this is the debate about the style of receiver that I think you need to have on your ball club.
All right, we've hit the top.
You know what's crazy, though? I mean, I say that I think they're going to stand pat. You never know.
No.
With Gene Smith. I mean, what, and I was reading the Jaguars released today, and you realize that they had 51 transactions in like a 4-day period. Yeah. And then all of a sudden you thought they were done, and I asked Gene if you were done, and he says, yeah, I'm done. And then all of a sudden Matt Ross is signed.
Jeff, who does
you never know.
Who does that remind you of when we were here? What was it? It was a revolving door on the bottom of the roster.
Absolutely, as it should be.
With Tom Coughlin in charge of that. Who did Gene Smith learn under?
Tom.
Right. Tom Coughlin.
All right, we've hit the top of the hour. Time to take a break for news. One more hour. Jaguars This Week live from the practice fields, the Florida Blue practice fields at Everbank Field for the Jaguars-Falcons joint practice this evening. News is next. And welcome back. Hour number two now of Jaguars This Week, our special Jaguars-Falcons practice edition. It's also the first night that we welcome Tony Buscelli to the show. We're not going to be so nice next week. Here he is, though. And so what we're doing is we're just sitting here on the north side of the practice field watching the Jaguars and the Falcons. They're in full pads, and different position groups are working. The Jaguars punt team is right in front of us here, and they're kicking to the Falcons. I imagine somewhere it's the reverse, probably over on that field. And that's really, I mean, for the first, two, three periods, it's just going to be.
Then everyone else is standing around getting ready for one-on-ones, inside run.
That this is kind of the beauty of when you work with another team is that there's a lot of guys standing around, right?
Yeah.
And so, I mean, for a player, you didn't have to take as many reps.
Let's tell the truth.
Judicious.
You didn't take many reps for practicing against each other.
I had a few limited days, that's all.
I see Zach Miller standing there with his sock pulled all the way up. That's not a good sign.
That's a concern to me. I mean, Zach Miller is a guy that has a ton of talent. A ton of the bad P word, potential. Sooner or later, you got to stop talking about potential.
And pull that one in.
And realize the gain that you hope you have in a guy like that. So
I think this is the first day he's been out.
I'm just talking about the overall scheme of this offense. I mean, this is an offense that has a playmaker at the running back position and a couple good running backs behind him. Limited outside as far as experience and big playability. In my opinion, the best all-around tight end, but not the best receiving tight end. So you need playmakers. You need guys that can create matchup problems. Aaron Hernandez last week gave Paul Posluszny fits, as he should, if you get that type of guy matched up with a linebacker. That's what they've always hoped Zach Miller would be. He's done it at moments. No consistency.
Now, and I think, you know, I know the first 2 years when he came in, he was dealing with some injuries. I know it was rookie year, he had the knee.
Yes.
Last year, he had the foot. This year, the encouraging thing is that he has practiced up until today virtually every practice. I want to start seeing flashes out of him, though, and I agree with Tony in that area that, you know, sooner or later you got to start seeing the consistent flashes. And he really hasn't been a star in training camp. Like, I don't want to say star, but you haven't seen the flashes in training camp yet, and at some point you got to start seeing that.
Well, and here's the thing about the NFL. Whether you're a first-rounder or a seventh-rounder, sooner or later, the only thing that can speak for you is your play. Only so long is it going to be the GM or the coach or the talking heads talking about how much talent you have and how much you can do. At the end of the day, you are what you are, and your talent – speaks for itself, and that's got to come to the forefront.
What happened on that drop the other night? He just dropped it. Just flat, that easy?
You know, and you know, one thing that the tight end group has is an outstanding coach. I think Rob Boris is one of the finest young tight end coaches in the league. And they say, well, why do you say that? Look what he did for Mercedes last year. I mean, who was a very good tight end, who was one of the best blocking tight ends in all of football, and all of a sudden last year he took Mercedes to another level. And coaches play a big part of that, taking a player to another level.
Yep.
And Rob is expecting a lot out of Zach Miller. And in my opinion, he hasn't gotten it yet.
Can we just drill down into that for a minute? Because I'm sure that people who are listening want to know how a particular coach takes a player to another level. Is it a philosophy? Is it a drill that they do on the field? Is it extra time in the film room?
Many things. It can be teaching new techniques. It could be teaching awareness. It can be teaching the offense to where instead of just teaching, hey, you have to do this on this play, you're saying you have to do this on this play, and here's why, and really explaining the concept. So, I mean, there's a lot of different ways that, you know, demanding more. There's so many different ways that a coach can make a player better, and I think Rob is an outstanding coach, and the Jaguars are fortunate to have him.
Let me give you a high philosophical answer to that, because Loggy's right, it's a lot of different things, but I think the one thing that all great coaches have is they see more in you and are not willing to accept anything less, even if you are, than what they see. And so Rob sees something in Mercedes, this player that he can be, and so he's going to demand, and Loggy said this, demand that out of him, and he's not going to let up. I think great coaches are demanding. They have different styles. Some yell. Some are soft-spoken. That's not important. What is consistent is they demand greatness out of players who can achieve it.
Let's stay with the tight end for just a moment. Have you all had a chance to talk to Mercedes about his offseason, his MMA training, Randy Couture and Jay Glazer? I mean, the thing that he said to me on Thursday in New England was, and I found this hard to believe because I'm more confident than I was a year ago. And when you watch him play and when you talk to Mercedes, confidence or a lack of it is not anything you ever worry about.
Well, he said, I mean, he's made the case a couple of times that he feels better about himself coming back than he did before physically. And he clearly thinks that's going to be a big factor.
But I think it's the training and physical. I think that's always a part of it. Success breeds confidence. For the first time in Mercedes' career,
10 touchdowns.
The success on the field and all the talking heads and all the experts are calling him one of the best tight ends in football. Listen, verbally, that matters to guys. When you start believing and hearing that, and not in the negative way, but you start seeing yourself as a great player, that goes a long way. So I think it's the success and the fact that people have now reinforced that. What was the message the first 2 years of this guy's career?
Blocker.
Bust as a tight end, just a blocker. Can't move and catch the ball. Can't be a move tight end. Well, he just proved all of us wrong. And now he's getting the praise, and I think the physical part of it, absolutely. The guy works hard. I mean, the guy looks like Adonis from the day he got here. I mean, he's one of those guys like, please put your shirt on. You're embarrassing me.
You know what's funny, though, is that every great player kind of has a story like that.
Yeah.
I agree.
You know, didn't Lynn Swann take ballet?
Yeah.
He did. You know?
And what, didn't Jerry Rice push a car up a hill? I mean,
yeah.
they all did.
They ran hills. And
Walter
and
Payton ran hills.
Walter Payton ran the hills. I mean, so every player has something that they really latch on to, and whatever it takes.
Did you ever do anything different in the offseason?
For me, I think what really helped me, and it wasn't really from a confidence standpoint, because I don't think I ever lacked the confidence.
No, that's not your problem. I don't think anything.
But from a physical standpoint, it was racquetball. Movement of the feet, quickness, change of direction. And for Mercedes, I think it goes beyond the confidence thing is because, you know, first couple of years, Tony did, about, you know, Mercedes may have been referred to as a bust. He looked awkward catching the ball. He looked tight. Well, MMA training, a lot of that has to do with flexibility.
In the hips in particular.
Absolutely. And I hope that this particular style of training for Mercedes will help him look more fluid.
Here's what he told me, that his goal coming out of that, because he felt more fluid in the hips with his kicks, was that he could pivot and get turned around faster.
Did he do this last year before?
No, this was the first year. Hold on, let me finish the thought, and then you comment on it. He was able to turn and give a bigger target to the quarterback because he felt more mobile, more fluid in the hips.
Okay, let me say this first and foremost. I think the training is outstanding. I think it's athletic, it's functional, it's flexibility. Any athlete who tells you that's not important is crazy. So all that's important. The guy had a great year before he ever did MMA once. The guy at UCLA, I watched a lot of football games on the West Coast. I'm an SC fan.
Oh, he was phenomenal.
He was an amazing wide receiver. The book on him, he couldn't block himself. And so don't tell me all of a sudden because he's done MMA, his hips are going to be looser and he's going to be a...
I'm just telling you what he told me.
And it doesn't matter...
But if he believes that,
that's all right.
As long as he believes it.
As long as he believes it. But the reality is this is a guy who had a great year last year, was a dynamic pass receiver in college. What clicked? I don't care. I don't know. Well, the bottom line is he is good at everything now.
Let's call it what it is. When he got here, he was paired with Kyle Brady, who was a phenomenal blocking tight end. And if you sit down with him today.
He was the third tackle.
Yeah, if you sit down with him today. Well, he was the guy that Joe Paterno told him after he left Penn State, I cost you a lot of money. I should have converted you to an offensive tackle.
And he would have been
probably a
Pro Bowl offensive
without a doubt.
Tackle.
But Logs, you and I both know that when he sat and worked with Kyle Brady, he learned to become a dominant blocker.
Sure he did, because
and Kyle's great at it.
He didn't really flourish as a receiver early on in his career, and so he had to, you know, the one thing about tight end play in the league, unless you're, you know, an Aaron Hernandez, a Dallas Clark, you know, that's just a phenomenal receiver, you got to earn your reps. You know, you got to earn the catches. In other words, you've got to learn how to block so you can stay on the field so you can get a catch. You know, so Mercedes, a tremendous football player. And if he can take it to another level, I can't wait to see it.
Hopefully he will push Zach Miller along with him. All right, let's take a break. More to come from Everbank Field in the Florida Blue practice fields where the Jaguars are getting set to work against the Atlanta Falcons. You're listening on News Talk Radio WOKV. Depend on it. And welcome back to Everbank Field and the Florida Blue practice field. Jaguars and Falcons scrimmaging this evening, playing on Fox on Friday night, 8 o'clock kickoff. We start things with the Sonny's Real Pit Barbecue tailgate show at 5 o'clock, 7 o'clock for the Sonny's pregame show. Whistle-to-whistle coverage of preseason game number 2. And then, of course, the Winn-Dixie postgame show and the Southern Ford Dealers scoreboard show. Still haven't seen much out here yet. They're working their way into it.
No, you know, Tony, we've kind of saved the conversation for the offensive line until you got back, and we really haven't gone there yet. Has anybody heard what Evan Britton had done to his back? No. I haven't heard anything.
I haven't heard anything either, and I don't know if there was a procedure done or what procedure was done. I know that he's beat up, that he hasn't been out for a while, and that they're concerned. They're concerned about the right tackle position. I mean, Jack came out and said it in our pre-production meeting before the New England game that I was asking about receiver. Are you concerned about receiver? He says, no, not really. I'm really. He went to right tackle without even being asked.
Well, and
there's real concern there.
I think the concern is that when Evan was practicing, he was pretty quiet. He was pretty quiet.
Pretty quiet and not very physical. Not. We haven't seen the Evan Britton that I fell in love with as a player since his rookie year.
Is there a minor media? But when you go into the back now, that there's nothing minor about that.
Anytime they put you under anesthesia, it's not minor. I mean, if there's unless it's like some like stretching or non-invasive procedure, but I don't think that's what it is. I think they did something.
Well, and the story was that he's not expected to miss significant time.
Right, that's
going into the regular season. I mean, you're talking about a guy who now has missed most of camp with a bad back.
And yeah, and the back, if your back is weak, it weakens your core, your midsection, which is so important for an athlete and an offensive lineman, especially if you're pass blocking, and you have to get your center of gravity and your power as someone's coming into you. And hold up. I mean, that core is important. Same with the run blocking, your explosion. If that back it's bad and it's weak and you've had a procedure, so how quickly can he come back? And it's a guy who started on a foundation that wasn't that strong anyways because of the injuries last year. So I just want the Evan Britton back that I saw his rookie year because I thought we had a guy who's going to be a right tackle for 12 years, barring injury. And a guy that was going to be a physical presence on the offensive line. I haven't seen it since the last game of 2009.
What are the options at that position? I mean, does Guy Wimper become the first
Tony
guy?
Ball. Well, Tony Ball's your guy.
They played Guy Wimper, you know, started him at right tackle, and he didn't play very well against the Patriots. And remember, Patriots weren't playing their frontline guys. And so I wouldn't be surprised to see Tony Maul, who worked exclusively at guard from the moment he got here until the New England game, which wasn't very long. But I wouldn't be surprised to see Tony Maul get some reps over there and then also to let Daniel Baldridge start getting some reps at right tackle. Look, I'm not saying that Daniel Baldridge is the answer, but he's tough. He plays hard. He works hard. He doesn't look like he's the prettiest tackle in the world when he's doing it, but, you know, he's got a chance.
Did John Runyon look that pretty doing it?
No, John Runyon, I mean, that's what I've told Brian and I think other people in the past that he looks like a young John Runyon because, you know, John Runyon was one of the most unathletic-looking right tackles to ever play, maybe.
It was hard to get around him, though.
But at the end of the play, all of a sudden, you're just like, did this guy make the play? No. Did this guy make the play on that play? No. You know, so they certainly need to start looking for certainly some temporary solution at the right tackle spot.
Well, that's him, right? I mean, tell us what you see in him that makes you think that he could be
He's fiery. You know, he's fiery. He's got long arms. He's got the frame. I was disappointed to not see him get the start at New England.
Yeah, I was a little surprised. I wonder, though, Jeff, if that was done because I think you know the downside of Guy Wimper. Maybe not a lot of upside, but at least you know the downside, and you're putting a rookie quarterback, your future franchise, in there. And if you put Daniel Baldridge in there and he misses an assignment or he blows a gasket and a free runner comes in, Baldridge has much more upside. How much? Who knows? He's a big, physical, nasty type of individual.
He's a mauler.
And I think you can get away with that at right tackle. I mean, he's on the front side of the quarterback. You're going to be heavy tight end a lot of times to the right. I think you can get away with that at that position.
Would Kevin Haslam, if he was healthy, be an option?
I don't think he's physical enough.
I'm just wondering if that's a loss.
No.
Of greater significance because of Britton's injury.
Tell us how you really feel, Jeff.
Yeah, rarely is that ever a problem. How about Wanneri at right guard? You know, the word is that Spitz is here to push him as much as he is to compete with the rookie Will Rackley. And I mean, Wanneri's a guy, Logs, you've talked about him over the years. Tremendous talent. Jaguars paid him last year, but that he goes through, you know, lapses.
He does.
And needs to focus.
Jeff, is he a guy that needs to always be pushed because he gets comfortable too quick?
Yeah, you know, I don't know. I don't know him personally that well. I can just tell you, you know, ultimately what matters and that he does have lapses.
Well, you know, I mean, we've all played with those guys that unless they're being pushed, they get comfortable. And when a guy gets comfortable, he doesn't play. In this league, you got to be on edge. I think the guys who are play for a long time, the great ones, they're consistently on edge. Whether it's their own drive of wanting to be great or the fear of failure, what every guy's motivated different, whatever it is. Some guys don't have it. I played with them. And the only way you get those guys to perform is when somebody's there pushing them and you create the fear of losing that position.
You know, John, you probably got the word. I mean, heck, here we are expecting Jason Spitz and Will Rackley to have a battle at left guard, and all of a sudden somebody's telling us, well, Jason Spitz is competing at right guard.
Yeah, what they're saying is, you know, Jason Spitz is a guy who's going to push everybody on the interior, is going to be that swing guy. But you certainly hear more about Wanneri and Spitz than you do Rackley and Spitz, mainly because I think they've looked at Rackley and see that if we get this guy on the field and give him time to develop, he's going to develop into something. There's not much doubt about where Will Rackley's headed.
You know what that is? You know, all of a sudden, Jason Spitz is, okay, he's going to compete with Will Rackley at left guard. They get a look at Will Rackley and say, well, we like what we see. He's motivated. He's a hard worker. He's got talent. And all of a sudden, a couple days later, well, Jason Spitz is going to be competing for time with Uche Wanner. You know what that is? That's a size, you know, 18 double-wide boot trying to go up Uche Wanner's rear end. They expect more out of him. Because he's got more in him, you know. They want to see the lapses go away and see that consistent production at a high level.
Spitz is a guy who can also play center. We saw him play. What did you see on the tape from him at center?
He made some mistakes at center, some calls that weren't made particularly correct. But, you know, I like him just because he's got flexibility.
He's a swing guy.
He can play left guard, center, right guard, and he can play them all pretty well.
He's the new Dennis Norman then.
Now, is he going to be able to step in for a guy and really take over and still play at that level that one of the starters did? Probably not, but you're going to feel real good about having him as, you know, your sixth offensive lineman on game day.
Seen anything from John Estes?
Well, I had a question for Tony. I did a story on Eugene Monroe this week talking about, you know, he's playing around 295, much lighter and much better shape. You know, Tony being the left tackle, I was wondering, is that too light?
I think it is. Jeff and I actually had the conversation. Okay. Before the New England game, it's a great question. I think it's too light. I think at 295, you're going to be playing at defensive ends that are 275, 280, that are right there. And what you lose, not that Eugene's not strong enough and powerful enough. He's obviously that. He's in great shape. I'm impressed with how hard he worked this offseason, even when though there was a lockout. And Log could probably speak to this better, but I'll speak it from an offensive line's position. When at 325 and I'm playing against a guy like Jeff at 270, by the fourth quarter, he is wore out because I'm leaning on him. I'm heavy. When he's on the ground, I'm not getting up for a while. I mean, I'm making life miserable, and there's a 50-pound weight difference. Ask Jeff how his legs and his back and his body feels compared to playing against a guy that's 285, 290.
Right.
Good player. Listen, there's been some great offensive tackles that play at that weight.
But there hadn't been many recently.
No, I think it's too light. I mean, this is a big year for Eugene Monroe to me. I've been a Eugene Monroe fan. I love the pick. I think he's a phenomenal athlete. Mm-hmm. I think he has the body type, the long arms. He has power when he wants to play with power. I worry about some of his technique in the passing game. I think he ducks his head too much. I think he gets in trouble sometimes. More than that, I want to see Eugene Monroe finish this year. I wanted to see him physical because I think he has the ability to be a Pro Bowl player. And he's not there yet.
All right, folks, we've hit the bottom of the hour. Time for news. But before we go, you can become a part of Jaguars Advantage, the new Jaguars fan loyalty program. With Jaguars Advantage, season ticket owners can earn up to 15% cash back at hundreds of their favorite online retailers. More information, go to jaguarsadvantage.com. Another half hour, Jaguars This Week, live from Everbank Field and the Florida Blue practice fields. The Jaguars and Falcons practice starting to heat up right in front of us. We'll have some exciting stuff to talk about when we return on News Talk Radio, WOKV. Depend on it. All right, a little more than 20 minutes left in our program, and as promised, they were lining up for 7-on-7 here and some goal line. And
that'd be 9-on-7.
9-on-7.
I'm sorry, 9-on-7. 9-on-7 running. And you were up there watching Terrence Knighton.
Yeah, he's a
beast.
He's a good player.
I thought you said that he was a bitch.
Real
tough to deal with.
You must have misheard him.
But you must have misheard. I think I said beast.
Oh, I'm sorry.
The first two plays, he took a double team on at the line of scrimmage and created such a pile there was nowhere to go on a counter. The next play, they tried to back him and they block him single on the backside, and he was 3 yards up the field and made a tackle for the loss. And I think the third one, it looked like he took another double team and just said, no, thank you very much. I'm not going to move. So he's a guy that, you know, listen – Terrence is going to be as good as he wants to be. I mean, that's the bottom line. There's, you know, guys in this league that were gifted by God to play the game of football and at a high level, and a lot of at the end of the day, it depends on them. And so, depends,
Tony,
if they want to do it.
You talked about coaching earlier. Obviously, Joe Cullen's an incredible motivator. What do you do when he can come in after not being here for the first 2 weeks and play like that? How do you motivate him in the offseason? What's the key?
Well, the fact that it was an embarrassment to himself, his family, and this franchise, the fact that he came in so out of shape and he's a professional athlete, my goodness, you understand how many people would like to be in that? I mean, you got to find him, you got to dog him, you got to encourage him, you got to –
You see who's talking to him right now? That's Tony Siragusa, who was another guy that got pretty big.
Well, it's one of the other things, too.
Two
is
different players, though, Siragusa and Knighton.
It's easy to teach Terrence Knighton, you know, even though he comes in and he looks great in the first three plays, all you have
still
to do
practice
is turn on the film from last year.
At times.
Because when Terrence was at 330, 335, I mean, he was kicking butt and taking names.
Was that for about a quarter and a half?
Well, no. I'm talking about for the full game.
Before
he would look like a beast. But then all of a sudden, towards the end of the year, the weight started to creep up, and he's probably 350 plus
inconsistency,
and he doesn't look like a beast anymore. So it's an easy way to teach. Joe Cullen can teach to Terrence Knighton. Is all he's got to do is, hey Terrence, here's you at 330, and then let's take a look at some snaps from when you're 350 plus.
Great, yeah, that's a good point. You just got to ride him. You got to be on him all the time.
How many snaps a game for that guy? And we're talking about Aaron Campman and him being effective with the knees coming back at his age.
Terrence is good enough.
It's a different game.
Terrence is good enough of a pass rusher to where he could play sub, which means that he could play every down on defense.
Okay.
Because he is a good pass rusher.
But, Jeff, they don't do that anymore. Everyone's rotating guys.
Yeah, but that's what I'm saying is that you don't have to do that.
No, you don't have to, but.
But he can give you some snaps. But if his weight is down and he's in good shape, he's a guy that if, hey, look, you could get him 65 snaps in a game and feel good that he can handle it because he's going to contribute on all 65 because he's that good.
Yeah, you don't see very many guys anymore that play every snap on defense.
Well, and the question becomes then, you know, so is DeAnthony Smith his replacement? Is Legay Doosable his replacement? And what do you give up with those guys on the field because they're not him?
John, on what was it, Saturday night, I believe it was, in practice, and it was one of the most intense practices, mm-hmm. probably the best practice I've seen yet.
I think it was Sunday night, but yeah. I mean,
it was 9-on-7 right. Drill. And all of a sudden, DeAnthony Smith hits the back in the backfield. And then the back, of course, they're taught, you know, 9-on-7 drill, you get hit one time, you keep running, finish the drill. running back bounces off and starts to swing to the outside, and DeAnthony, who had made the stop in the backfield, saw the running back take off and just keep on running, and he ran him down
right
on the sideline and then hit him with almost like one of them clothesline things, but it wasn't around the neck. It was just like in the shoulder pad, and lifted the running back off his feet and landed on his back. And you're just like, that was one of those plays where you go, wow, right, that was something. You know, and so he's starting to show flashes of that, but he's got a long way to go.
Different player, but, too, Jeff.
But here's
he's a one-gapper, give up the field. He's not a guy.
He is, but that's
on
the style of defense they're going to play.
Right.
Going forward.
But Terrence is the guy who takes will take the double team and give those linebackers free
what I call
a
three-gap player. Yep. But here's the most incredible thing. DeAnthony Smith tore an Achilles tendon last year.
Yeah, that's a great point.
I mean, Dan Marino tore an Achilles as a quarterback, and then when he came back and played, you sat there and you looked at him and you go,
he was 45 years old.
Yeah, but he was a quarterback. But I mean, still, he came back and he'd be limping out on the field, you know, walking down the field in a 2-minute drill because he couldn't even jog down to the next play. And here's the guy, a defensive tackle, who comes back. He's fit. He's in great shape. He's running around, and you go, and if somebody went up to a stranger and said, hey, that guy right there, looks pretty good, doesn't he? And if you told him he tore an Achilles, they'd go, what?
Well, thank goodness he's a better athlete than Dan Marino. Otherwise, we're in big trouble if he's the backup.
So you got to play a completely different style up front when you don't have Terrence Knighton in there.
I think, you don't play a different style because it's your defense. But I think it's going to look different. I mean, DeAnthony Smith is 295 pounds. He's a one-gap, get up the field. And I saw the same thing that Jeff did not that night, but I've seen him get up the field and make people look bad because he's in the backfield. Terrence Knighton can do that, but Terrence Knighton also can take two extremely large human beings, the center and guard, and sit there, much like the guy you talked about, Tony Siragusa, because I tried to double-team him with, you know, Ben Coleman, two 325-plus-pound guys, and it's hard. You can't move those individuals sometimes, and that changes what those linebackers can do. And so I'm not saying – I don't know how – if they call the defense difference. I don't think Mel Tucker does that. It's going to be a different look.
Well, we'll see how it goes against the Falcons and Michael Turner the rest of the evening. Again, the two teams are practicing, not scrimmaging. And right now they're separate, doing an install period to get ready to come back. I guess we're going to see team next.
I think we always used to do blitz next. Do they do blitz period still?
Yeah, they should. I mean,
I would think blitz would be next, and then you're going to go to your 7-on-7 periods, and your offense and defensive linemen are going to go to 1-on-1s. And then after that, you should have two long team periods to close out practice. That would be my guess is what they're going to do. That was always my experience in these type of practices. So, I'm looking forward. I'm going to go watch the blitz period on our offense because I want to see how Blaine Gabbert handles that.
And I wouldn't be surprised if they just don't have a blitz period.
Just build the blitz in?
Just because if you're going to play this team in two nights.
That's a great.
And you're going to play them on a Thursday night.
Great point.
Do you really want to let them see your blitz period?
Or do you just run the blitzes, Jeff, that every
the standard
team,
every
team
blitz.
That, you know, your Mike Sam, your double-A, you know, your double-A barrels, your, you know, Sam, Will Weinbacher Week, maybe a strong safety shark. I mean, the basic blitzes that every team's going to run.
Yeah, I don't know, but certainly going to see 7-on-7, we're going to see 1-on-1 pass rush, and we'll see a lot of team.
All right, we're due for a break as we go. Bueller Swiss Watch Company is once again proud to be the official watch of the Jaguars. You can get your Bueller Swiss Watch at Allen's Jewelers in Jacksonville. The Robinson Jewelry Company up in Fernandina Beach. Faceted Rainbow in Ocala. Kingsley Jewelry in Orange Park. And Lords and Barons Jewelers down I-10 in Tallahassee. One more segment to this show. Jaguars and Falcons working on the Florida Blue practice fields outside Everbank Field. You can't see it, but you can hear it right here on News Talk Radio, WOKV. Depend on it. All right, here we go. Back to wrap up the Falcons-Jaguars edition of Jaguars this week from Everbank Field. Sexton, Loggeman, Baselli, Osher, in no particular order here watching, once again, the Falcons offensive linemen and the Jaguars' defensive front. Is this one-on-one pass rusher?
No, this is like a half-line drill. It's kind of a half of a 9-on-7 drill. So you'll have some run looks, and then you'll also have some pass protection. So it's kind of a combination. Not quite as intense as a 9-on-7 drill.
We used to do a lot of this in college. I actually never did this drill
or not very much when I was here with the Jags. I don't know if you remember us doing it, Loggy. Maybe we did. But it's a drill that a lot of teams do. What it does is it protects you from injury. It's an injury protector because if the whole line is going, especially in a pass play, safer, you can still get the full speed look. You know, is it as realistic? No, because you're eliminating half the field for the quarterback. I mean, but it's still a good drill.
And they're handing it off, and I'm watching. There's some young guys out there. Aaron Morgan's out there.
Well, that was Matt Roth right there working against the one of the right tackles for the Falcons. I think his name is Valdez.
But not as it's not as intense.
It's not as intense as 9-on-7. It's kind of, you know, first couple steps are full speed, and then they back it down.
Which I don't like that, though. As a player, it was fine if I was practicing against my guys because, you know, so long as I knew, you know, at the end of the day, you know, maybe after, especially after the first week of camp, you're not there to try to embarrass anybody. You know, you're trying to work, and if you beat a guy, you beat him.
Right.
But if I had someone like Logs on the ropes, I'm not going to try to bury him and, you know, and put him on the ground. And if he's, you know, if he's beaten me and gotten me in a bull rush and I'm on my heels, he's not going to try to, you know, dump me and make – I mean – because we know who won the play, and it is what it is. You can tell on film. The coaches can tell. And so you can work three-quarters to seven-eighths, whatever type of speed. When you're playing against someone else, in my opinion, my mentality was, we're either going full speed, boys, or we're walking through because I don't trust you. And I'm not going to – I mean, I have no interest of you trying to make me look bad.
In a drill like this where you got kind of the tempo held down a little bit, you can get embarrassed.
You can get embarrassed bad. And
Tony didn't like getting embarrassed.
No. I do not like that. Does anybody, though?
No. Do you see a difference in the way that that these two teams are working tonight from a year ago? I mean, because of the rules and you know, the way the teams are practicing differently this year? Can you tell anything?
No. I mean, so far it's looked like what it did like what it did last year. Similar tempo. I would say this, though, that if you really – broke it down, I would bet that this practice probably won't have the tempo that they had last year because you got a preseason game 2 days away.
Yeah, we didn't have that when we worked back-to-back up there.
And I think you got more done. I wasn't there last summer. I didn't go up to Atlanta, but I'll go back to how we started the show off talking about, is this a trend? Do we like this? I just think you don't get the same intensity when you don't go back-to-back. When you're there back-to-back 2 days, by the end of it, you hate somebody on the other team. I mean, there's somebody on the other team that you're not happy with, that you want to take a shot at. And, I mean, things – and that just – I don't know if that adds to the evaluation process at all. I don't know if that makes you a better player. Oh. I just know it makes it more interesting watching practice.
I mean, if you're going to lay odds right now, you got to say that Austin Lane's going to mix it up with someone before this night.
I got to be honest with you. Austin Lane, I think, is – of all the guys who were rookies last year – obviously, I think Tyson Alualu has taken a big step, but of that mid to late round pick that you didn't know what you were going to get when you came back, he is the guy that has taken the step you would hope. And I'm actually pretty proud of Austin because he's a young guy who did it during a lockout year. And is he the most talented guy out here? No. But I love the fact that he's not afraid to start a fight and mix it up. And I'll be just fine if he starts a fight tonight, and it'll be fun to watch.
Wow. You mentioned Tony. I mean, you mentioned Tyson a minute ago. And we've all talked about how everybody says this kid's just taking a huge step. How much better, when a defensive tackle makes that kind of step, does it make the defensive line?
Oh, gosh.
I mean.
Especially a three technique.
Three technique. Let me say it from a offensive line standpoint. If you play, we played Warren Sapp, and I'm not saying he's Warren Sapp yet. John Randall, he'd move around end to tackle. Bryant Young for the 49ers. It changed how you had to do things. Not just the guy who was blocking him, but it changed where you slid. It changed as an offensive tackle when you're trying to cut off that backside three technique, how you have to cheat a little bit because that guy's so explosive up the field. It changed the fact that if I'm playing left tackle and I know I have him as a three technique, I'm worried about the game now because this guy can beat, you know, he can beat you one-on-one even within the game. And I'm also worried about the fact that there's a chance my guard's going to get beat and that quarterback's going to be coming out my way. I better be firm. I better stay with my block longer because the pocket's going to be different. It's harder for a tackle if you have an offensive tackle. If that three technique's pressing the pocket,
the quarterback can't step up, longer angles for me to block. Jeff, I promise you, loves when a three technique gets up the field because he has a better chance of getting sacked.
Well, there may be some listeners out there that are going, well, what's a three technique?
Oh, yeah, good call, Jeff.
For people to really understand a three technique, if you look at a defense, you have a nose tackle, and he shades, let's say, just think about it in your mind. We got Terrence Knighton to the, and you're standing as a safety, looking at your front. Terrence Knighton is shaded to the left of the center, okay? And then Tyson Alualu is on the outside shoulder of the guard on the right side. So Tyson's on the right side. And then you got another defensive end outside him. And so, in other words, the linemen that are next to Tyson Alualu, they have to worry about other people because they have a nose tackle and they have a defensive end. And so most of the times a three technique deals with a single block. One guy can block them on each play. And so the three technique has the power and the ability, because of the design of the defense, to be the most disruptive on any play the offense runs, more so than anybody else. Because he's in the middle of the defense, he's going to be singled up for the most part, and he can just rip and take off and
so,
go.
And so to Jeff's point, that's a great point. If you have that guy, and you're, I've sat in the offensive line rooms when we played those guys, now you have to change. You have to slide the backside guard, who, where Jeff was talking about, it would be the left guard, to go pick up that one technique and let the center peek outside and help the guy, the guard who's blocking one-on-one on the three technique. And so it changes everything. It really changes your scheme. And the one thing that we haven't had here for a little bit is that defensive lineman that forces you to game plan him and change your blocking scheme.
Who's the best three technique off, or pardon me, defensive tackle in the game today? Can you think of off the top of your head?
Oh,
we're talking,
man,
about the John Randalls and the Warren Sapps.
Are you talking about when they want to play or all the time?
A guy that you would hate to have to play
Albert
too
Haynesworth.
Often.
When Albert Haynesworth wants to play and he's lined up at a three technique, get your hard hat on, hold on to your whatever you got, and you better just stay in between him and the quarterback the best you can, because he's a guy who can literally pick you up.
Yeah, and over the last couple of years, you know, he's had a lot of issues. Well, talked about, well written about, you know. But besides that, no, I'd have to look at a sheet to just kind of
wonder if there's someone that jumps off at you as being that.
No,
kind of guy.
I mean,
Tommy Harris was that guy for a couple of years, right?
Yeah, kind of, and you know, then he's got the knee, and then he has never been the same.
I don't mean to put you on the spot. I'm just trying to think of.
You know, I don't know. I mean, it,
Williams from Minnesota. Not
good.
Pat plays the one.
Kevin.
Yeah, Kevin Williams.
Plays, he's a guy.
He's right up there.
Who can take it over? The guy Sean for the Browns, who played for Detroit.
Sean Rogers.
He's a guy when he wants to can take over a game. He's more of a one technique though, the nose guard position.
We're watching Matt Ryan rolling right and just throwing the ball away.
They're doing a tight red zone drill where they're getting close to the goal line. And the first play, by the way, Julio Jones caught a pass from Matt Ryan, and Julio Jones was being covered by Rasheen Mathis. And this is the first time I've got a chance to see Julio Jones.
Looks like a tight end.
He is huge. Yeah.
He looks like Aaron Hernandez from last week.
Yeah, he does. He's so—I mean, he's tall.
And all reports are is that he's been phenomenal in camp.
It looks like he's
he had to be to justify what he gave up to go.
Like he's done some bicep curls and some triceps and his arms. I think he's been in the weight room before. He's a guy that if they need to, they can line him up at defensive end and he can rush the passer too. I mean, that's what he looks like.
And now you know you're talking about a guy that's going to line up opposite of Roddy White, who's a darn good wide receiver.
Oh, Roddy's a fantastic wide receiver. I mean, they've got two really good wide receivers in Atlanta.
And Gonzalez is still a guy that you have to account for when he lines up in the red zone.
15th year? I mean, wow. He's been around forever.
And good player.
No tight end has ever caught more passes and more touchdowns than that guy has. So as we're wrapping things up here, we're getting a look. And I'm anxious to see or hear at least how David and Blaine are doing over there against the Falcons defense. It's pretty good too. So,
well, and I want to add this. I mean, it seems like we've gone 2 hours. We haven't even really talked about David Garrard.
Not at all.
David returned to practice this weekend, and since then he has looked very sharp.
Yeah.
Very, very sharp.
But I'll say this, and we can pick it up next week.
All right.
There's a conversation to be had between the young guy and the old guy.
You're stirring it up.
All right, here we go, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to the show.
Thank
glad
you
to have
much.
You.
Good to be here, guys.
All right, we're going to break it from there. Hope you enjoyed it. Have a great night, everybody.